Hello, I'm Charlene Luchterhahn, and I'm here with Adam Rindfleisch, an integrative medicine consultant and family physician at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. An ambulatory care innovation grant has made it possible for our program to bring you this brief podcast on non-pharmaceutical options for osteoarthritis. Hi, Adam.
Hello there.
Can you give us some background about osteoarthritis?
Certainly. Osteoarthritis is the most common joint disorder. It affects about 30% of people ages 45 to 64, and after age 65, it affects about 70% of people. Symptom management is usually what we focus on as physicians, but there are a number of other options that you can consider as well, and that's what I'm here to talk about today.
What is the latest thinking about the pathophysiology of osteoarthritis?
Well, a lot of people assume that osteoarthritis is simply wear and tear on a joint. You have the cushion breaks down, and that's that. As more research is emerging, we're seeing that it's actually a very heterogeneous disease. There are four key etiological factors that people talk about. One is that the chondrocyte cells become disordered with their biology. One is that there can be a genetic risk. Biomechanical forces can affect it. And finally, inflammation can lead to changes as well. In fact, osteoarthritis can be classified as non-inflammatory or inflammatory depending on the types of symptoms. In the case of non-inflammatory, people only have disability-related complaints and pain, whereas with inflammatory arthritis, they'll also have joint swelling, pain at night, and the morning stiffness that we normally associate with osteoarthritis as well.
So how would an integrative approach to osteoarthritis be different, say, from what might be used in more conventional approaches to treatment?
When I see somebody in a primary care practice, what I've been taught to do in terms of my medical school training is try to get rid of the symptoms. That is, try to alleviate the pain, try to encourage the person to get supports on their joint, and ultimately consider surgery if they need to. However, there are a number of things that are out there that might actually be beneficial prior to the development of the disease, in addition to things that may actually slow the progress of the disease. Some of the things that we think about in integrative medicine are things that come to us through complementary and alternative medical therapies. That can include everything from lifestyle modifications and nutrition to mind-body approaches, acupuncture, manipulation, or various dietary supplements, all of which are worth thinking about when you're working with someone with osteoarthritis.
How does exercise fit into the picture?
I think of exercise as something that's almost universally applicable for people with most chronic illnesses, provided that they're able to tolerate them. Certainly, with exercise, one of the most important things is to make sure that people are staying active, in part because it controls obesity so that they won't be putting as much weight on the joint, but also because it allows them to maintain flexibility and strengthen the ligaments and tendons. A lot of people don't realize it, but when you have osteoarthritis, it's not just a disease of the joint. You also start to get more muscle laxity, and the ligaments and tendons start to give out as well. I'll often encourage people to think about various exercises. This can be anything from pull exercises, biking or swimming, to aerobic dance, or actually there's some evidence that Tai Chi and yoga can be useful as well in some initial studies.
And how does nutrition fit into this? What do we know about nutrition in osteoarthritis?
Well, unfortunately, direct relationships between various forms of nutrition and osteoarthritis are a little bit unclear as far as the evidence. I'll tell you, though, my experience has been that certain things do make a difference in my patient population, and I'm sure that evidence will eventually bear this out. One thing that I like to recommend is the anti-inflammatory diet, which is based on, as you're often hearing with other chronic diseases, minimize your red meats, minimize your animal protein, try to increase your fruits and vegetables, drink adequate water, whole grains, things along the lines of the Mediterranean diet. All those things are known to decrease inflammatory mediators in the blood and can be helpful. In addition, I'm also a big fan of omega-3 fatty acids, fish oil, flax oil, and those can also be quite helpful as far as different ways to decrease inflammatory chemicals in the body, inflammatory mediators, so that patients have less pain from different forms of inflammation.
Integrative medicine places an emphasis on mind-body approaches to care as well. What mind-body techniques might work when you're working with someone with osteoarthritis?
The lovely thing about mind-body techniques is that all of them are geared toward eliciting a relaxation response and giving people insight into the patterns that they follow when they're dealing with a particular health problem. When you keep that in mind, I tend to tell people that the mind-body modality that works best for a particular person is whatever seems like it will work best for that person. In other words, you tailor it to the individual. Some of the ones that have the best information for the treatment of pain include mindfulness meditation. Frequently, our clinic will work with the mindfulness-based stress reduction program for that. Hypnosis also seems to be useful. And then there are also some studies with evidence of benefit for just relaxation in general, breathing exercises or progressive muscle relaxation. It's all about finding something that the person enjoys doing, something that actually allows them to relax, and something that they find can actually give them sort of a space not to just focus on their disease, but to focus on what they need as an individual in general.
There have been some articles recently suggesting that acupuncture has some potential benefit. Can you tell us more about that?
There was a wonderful review in the April 18th issue of the Journal of the American Medical Association by Berman. What he does is summarize all the data there in terms of osteoarthritis of the knee, which has been studied the most in terms of osteoarthritis. What the studies show is that overall there is a trend toward a benefit, and that's true when you take acupuncture versus sham acupuncture, that is putting needles in places that aren't necessarily where a traditional Chinese practitioner would put them, and also when you have people compare acupuncture to placebo. With that, there was a 2006 randomized controlled trial that received a lot of press in which over 350 patients with knee or hip arthritis got acupuncture, and they did show a significant improvement in pain scores on the acupuncture group. It's certainly something worth trying. As the article by Berman notes, however, acupuncture can be expensive, and we're still working to try to have that covered by a lot of insurances. Right now, estimates are that about one-third of acupuncture sessions are covered by insurance, but I would guess that it might be lower than that.
And what about supplements? Can you give us your take on glucosamine and chondroitin?
Certainly, and that's certainly an area where there has been a lot of controversy lately. A little bit about both of them first. Glucosamine is an amino sugar which is converted into cartilage proteoglycans, which are one of the main components of cartilage. It's been found to stimulate the cartilage cells, the chondrocytes, and improve metabolism. It also seems to reduce pain to some degree. So not only does it remove symptoms, but it could very well slow the progression of the disease. There's a lot of argument out there about whether or not it's effective. And in fact, a recent meta-analysis concluded that it may not be as effective as people had recommended. Some of the reasons for this include that glucosamine hydrochloride is often studied, but glucosamine sulfate is the one that a lot of the supplement experts say is the one that works the best. In addition, studies show evidence of benefit, but don't necessarily have the same scales to measure pain or dysfunction. And some scales will actually show benefit, and studies using other scales will not. It can get kind of confusing in that regard as well. In addition, the product variant seems to play a role. There was a study of glucosamine formulations, and the amount of glucosamine actually in the product was anywhere from 0 to 115% of what they said was there. And then finally, the frequency of dosing can also vary. It's been recommended by a number of experts that you actually do divide the dose into two or three doses a day rather than taking it all at once, and that makes a difference as well. I tend to tell people to use 1,500 milligrams a day divided in three different doses. Now, when you look at chondroitin, you have a little bit of a different story. Chondroitin is a glycosaminoglycan and is incorporated into cartilage as well. It's a variable-sized molecule, though, based on where they derive it. Chondroitin comes from animal cartilage, and it's found in the cartilage of most mammals, but of course, typically we get ours from bovine cartilage or pig cartilage or something like that. A meta-analysis of about 20 trials on chondroitin concluded that the symptomatic benefit is, quote-unquote, minimal or non-existent. However, a lot of people have argued that the jury is really still out because the trials are quite variegated, and also that many of the randomized controlled trials that are out there have indeed shown benefit. It may be that once again we're seeing a difference in quality of the different products that they use, the length of time that it's dosed, and so on. The nice thing about both of these supplements is that the safety data is really quite good. In studies up to 6 years with chondroitin, there have been no evidence of significant problems. I do tell people to be cautious prescribing it to vegetarians without giving them fair warning that it comes from animals oftentimes. In addition, the early concerns that chondroitin wasn't absorbed aren't true, that at least 10-15% or so is probably absorbed through the GI tract, and that's sufficient to get it to the joints. There was a case where a patient with asthma developed worsening asthma after taking chondroitin, and some people do say that you should be cautious with asthma. Now, as far as safety with glucosamine, there was some debate that it might cause people's blood sugars to become more labile, but that actually hasn't really borne out. It seems that when you look at human studies as opposed to animal studies, that's really not a significant complaint. And the key is, if you have someone who's diabetic taking glucosamine, just pay close attention to their sugars for the first little while.
What about other supplements? Some people talk about MSM and SAMI.
Yes, those are a little less commonly known, but there is some promising evidence for both of them. SAMI is short for S-adenosyl-L-methionine. It's S-A-M, small case E, and it is pronounced SAMI. It's formed by the ATP activation of the amino acid methionine, and it functions in a lot of different reactions, probably over 600 in the body. Its role in the treatment of arthritis really isn't completely understood, but it does seem to help stimulate the production of some of the proteoglycans that make up cartilage. It is both analgesic and has some anti-inflammatory effects, according to a lot of studies. And there are actually studies out there that show that it's superior to placebo, as well as comparable to things like ibuprofen, Celebrex, and indomethacin when you treat osteoarthritis. It tends to be extremely safe, but it's also used as an antidepressant, and I wouldn't recommend its use in anyone taking antidepressant medications or with a history of bipolar disorder, because it may make that worse. As far as the MSM goes, MSM stands for methyl sulfonyl methane, which is also commonly used for osteoarthritis. It's normally found in plants, and it provides the sulfur groups to produce amino acids. When they look in animals, they find that animal joint degeneration is actually slowed by the use of MSM. And what few trials there are in humans, while they've been mixed, have found some promise as well. Again, the nice thing about it is that there are very limited indications that it causes any sorts of side effects. Those side effects that are out there include allergy symptoms, but that's incredibly rare, no more so than any other supplements.
And are there supplements that can be used for pain?
I get that question a lot during integrative medicine consultations. And while there are things out there that can be used as herbal anti-inflammatories, I do remind people that most of those, while being equivalent to a lot of the anti-inflammatories over the counter, don't necessarily stack up to things like narcotics if you're absolutely unable to control someone's pain. That being said, a lot of people with osteoarthritis don't need the full-fledged narcotics, and most physicians would agree that it's best to avoid those if possible because of all the side effects, the addictive potential, and so on. Some of my favorites, which are out there, and which I review in a handout that I've created on the website for phyto anti-inflammatories, include Boswellia, which is Indian frankincense. You can use 300 milligrams three times a day. Cat's claw, which is also scored pretty well in studies. This is an herbal that comes from jungles of South America. Unfortunately, it can sometimes cause diarrhea for people. And then another one is devil's claw, which also does very nicely at controlling pain. Certainly, you can also use things like ginger and turmeric, and those have good results. Willow bark, which is the origin of aspirin, is another one to consider. What I'll usually do is encourage patients to take a look and to give them a list of my favorites. Typically, I'll suggest Boswellia, then Devil's Claw, and turmeric as some high-priority ones, with some of the others as kind of my plan B, as it were.
Are there any other supplements to talk about?
Well, it's interesting. There are a lot of new research projects out there, and some of them are pretty fascinating. One research project that I've been looking forward to hearing about, if anyone actually gets a study done, is on vitamin D and osteoarthritis. They found that in the cartilage cells of people with osteoarthritis, vitamin D receptors are upregulated, which indicates that the joints are hungry for vitamin D. You wonder if perhaps supplementation could be helpful. Similarly, with vitamin C and its relationship with collagen cross-linking, there's some indication that it may be useful, although this remains unclear in terms of what research we have. The same holds true for vitamin E, may help with symptoms, but we don't know for certain. A few others have shown some promise. One is boron, the mineral. It's often used as an osteoporosis supplement as well. There is some evidence that people with osteoarthritis have femoral bones with less boron, and that taking sodium tetraborate decahydrate, that's a mouthful, has been found in some studies to reduce symptoms. Rose hips have potential, and another supplement called TPT might ultimately show some promise as well. There was a study of an East Asian cocktail made of three plants, which include Clematis species, Trichosantes, and Prunella. And that actually showed pretty good efficacy in two randomized controlled trials as well, though I don't know of it being widely available in the U.S. as of yet. Finally, there's some talk about using avocado soy unsaponifiables, that is ASUs, and those are starting to show some promise in studies as well. I've actually seen those in the market at a number of health food stores recently, and it's something to try. as the name would imply, they're derived from avocado and soy and probably do have their uses. And then one of my favorite ones, which I just can't resist mentioning, is New Zealand green-lipped mussel. If for no other reason than the name, it's intriguing. What they found was that the Maoris who live on the coasts of New Zealand don't have very much osteoarthritis. And one of the thinking is that it's because they eat a lot of these mussels. They've done some studies, and at least for dogs, the supplements seem to be safe and quite effective. However, we're still waiting for human trials.
Thanks for talking with us about these approaches today. Any other thoughts as we conclude?
I would just say, remember that you need to think about osteoarthritis patients as individuals. The key really is to try to tailor the various therapeutic options based on what you know about the person and what, number one, they're willing to do, that is, how well they'll be compliant, and number two, based on the side effects and your concerns. Certain people gravitate towards certain types of therapies. Some people are much more into the mind-body. Some would rather just have you suggest a supplement or a dietary intervention. Make sure you tailor it to them. The other thing I always like to remind people is that there are any number of other modalities out there as well. Certainly chiropractic has shown a little bit of promise, though our data is limited. Massage therapy has shown some benefit in recent studies as well. And finally, I am a big fan, because it does tend to be safe, although not well-researched to date, of using various energy medicine modalities. I find that sometimes having healing touch providers do a technique which is called a pain drain can be extremely helpful for patients with chronic joint pains.
Thank you very much, Adam. That concludes this podcast.